Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing, testing. Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing, testing. Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing, testing.
Well, good evening, everyone. I declare the meeting open just on 7 p.m. I acknowledge that the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians of this land, and we pay our respects to their elders, past and present. Everyone is advised that the audio of this General Council meeting will be recorded and will be made available on the City of Marion website. Before getting into the business of the meeting, I did want to make some comment on matters that arose while I was away. I am thankful for the indulgence of councillors in that I was away for the last two council meetings, and I particularly wanted to voice my approval from the chair of one of the big decisions that was made while I was away. And I'm particularly referring to the rates rise of 2.9%. That's some 40% reduction in the average from the previous 10 years. So I think it's quite an achievement, although we have a long way to go. But there was another decision which I think is worthy of comment from myself as mayor. A very significant decision that will be with us for a long time to come. And I'm very excited about it, thoroughly approve of it. Of course, I'm referring to the selection of Mr. Adrian Skulls, the incoming chief executive. And when he starts at the end of August, I think he'll be a valuable asset to council. Now, I'll continue with the order of business. Is there any elected members' declaration of interest in one of the matters on the agenda? Councillor Appleby.
Yes, the telecommunications tower, due to my position on the DAP.
Right. Can I just ask for the advice of the manager of governance in relation to that, whether being a member of the DAP would disqualify in relation to the Keller Reserve motion?
Thank you, through the chair. The matter of the development application with the development assessment panel for the telecommunications tower at Kellett Reserve has already been addressed by the development assessment panel. However, if members of the development assessment panel wish to preclude themselves from this part of the meeting, that is fair and reasonable. It may be that if such a matter is appealed in the ERD court and then is referred back to the development assessment panel for any further comment. So it could be that the DAP has reason to consider the matter into the future, depending on what the next steps are with the matter. I would recommend that, given the matter may actually come back to the development assessment panel at some point in time, that the members of the DAP be not present for that item.
I'd like to declare a member of DAP and also the Code of Conduct matter.
Murray Darling Association, thank you.
quite the opposite, Mr. Mayor. There is a deputation here awaiting this item. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I thank those members of the public for coming along for this item. Mr. Mayor, some time ago, not all that long ago actually, Diptai came along and met with Council in the committee room and gave us a presentation about the Darlington Interchange proposal. Little did we know that at that very time there were plans afoot for a significant change to what we were told. And within a couple of weeks, it became apparent to council staff that the change was a significant change to what we were originally told. Mr. Mayor, this is bad form by Diptai. It's something that we've grown to become used to, particularly with the stretcher road. Stage one of the Southern Expressway, this council almost begged Diptai to actually address the noise attenuation issue associated with the new road and the special place that we all identify with being Warrapuringa. Nothing was done. Stage two come along, Mr. Mayor. We made the same request in an impassionate way. Nothing was done. Diptai have shown contempt for this council and for this site over an extended period of time. And now, the third episode being this, where there is a road that actually is going to run parallel with what we were originally told, cross the Sturt River and extend up, right up to the intersection of Sturt and South Road that we weren't told about. I believe that even if this road was necessary, the length of that road is excessive and therefore just absolute disregard for this site. It is a significant site for this council of Aboriginal significance as well as the more recent European community. The Friends of Warrapuringa have worked darn hard down there over many years to actually restore the native vegetation, showed a lot of care, they've received many community grants, and they were the ones that raised this concern with me. Mr. Mayor, I move that we as a council direct staff to advise Diptai, the Minister for Transport, Stephen Mulligan, the local member for Mitchell, I think it would be in that area, and Elder for that matter, that we will not support in any way in making land available for any encroachments into the Warrapuringa site. So there is a change to the motion that's printed. I'm just picking up the Minister for Transport and the two local members that are near that site, the Member for Mitchell and Elder. I never had a chance to speak to it last time, Mr. Mayor. It was quickly dealt with by another member and adjourned, a time-critical item.
And just because this is a joint federal initiative, whether it's worth communicating to the appropriate federal member, because I believe the Office of Jamie Briggs was involved in this, so whether it's worth getting them involved too as opposed to just the state counterparts. I guess I think that I've had some concerns about this project. I don't personally see it as a priority. I think the money would be better off spent on the Oaklands Crossing. The one closer to the city, that overpass, is going to get more transport. And there's aspects of this which people aren't happy about, so I'm not going to give this any more legs than it needs. So I'm happy to support Councillor Hull. If we do write to these members, I think we do need to include the federal member whose money has made all this possible.
I support this. I pushed to defer so that we could actually see where the road was proposed to be going, because what was put out into the community was a very rough A4 piece of paper with hardly any information. When we see the road, and we see that it's sure to have impact on the vegetation at Warraparinga site going over the river, I'm going to go in and have a look at where the placement of the 27 regulated and significant trees are that are likely to now be removed by the state government on this. So there are vegetation, tree impacts, and also Indigenous land impacts. And I think it is just negligent of the state government to think if there's a reserve you can chop it up. I don't think that's good enough.
It's just a procedural question, Your Worship. Given that there has been an amendment, do you need a new seconder? And given that the existing seconder of the adjourned item is not present?
I won't need 5 minutes. And I'm Jeff Allen. I'm actually vice president of the Marion Bowling Club, not president, as reported. That's okay. No, I didn't want that promotion. Thank you for allowing us to speak briefly today regarding our plans to install solar panels on the club rooms. We're one of the larger bowling clubs in Adelaide. We have top quality greens, a good clubhouse, and an enthusiastic and hard-working group of volunteers. And because of this, it's some of the more significant state bowls events that held our club. However, like many clubs, it is a constant struggle to keep the club in a good financial position. We made losses in 2012 and 13 and 13-14, and last year we made a small profit. Our large expenses are our greens maintenance and our utility costs. Our electricity expenses alone are about $25,000 a year. Last year, the board put a proposal to our members that we install solar panels using some of our reserves, as well as seeking a grant to help cover the costs, and this was strongly supported by our members. We estimate that the system we proposed will save us the order of $10,000 to $12,000 per year. As part of this process of getting all the approvals, we arranged an engineer's report on the condition of the roof. We were aware that the roof had some issues because we've had leaks in the past during very stormy weather. So there's been buckets around the place after some heavy, wet and windy days. Over the years, we've arranged and paid for the minor repairs to be carried out. The engineer's report has indicated that some significant work needs to be undertaken to support the solar panels. We were asked to consider an option of having a smaller system on that part of the roof that was considered safe, and we rejected this as it would have very limited benefit of the club with a much smaller system. It's an ongoing struggle to keep our club strong financially, and we're not alone in that, I don't think. Most of our revenue is achieved solely through the efforts of our volunteers, through running bowls competitions like night hours, preparing meals, working behind the bar, etc. They do a great job, our volunteers. There's little scope, though, to increase our revenue, apart from putting fees up for members, and we're loath to do that. Keeping costs down is vitally important, and this decision will help with this cause. I also note that we've just been advised of a significant increase in our emergency services levy, which has gone up from $475 to $2,400. Now, I know that's on the agenda for later on discussion today, and I will also support that action that you plan to take on that. So I ask you to support the recommendation that the roof be prepared and that the council give approval for the solar panels. Thank you.
Yes, but I'd like to, with the leave of the meeting, add a third point. All right. My third point would be that the Marion Sports and Community Club Management Committee be advised. And speaking to this, this is something that has been with the club for over 3 years of planning and waiting for council to see where it fitted in the master plan. Now that we've moved away from the full thrust of the Marion Master Plan, they can now move forward. This is in line with our environmental endeavours as a council to look at ways of getting community electricity, community solar cells. So everything aligns. The only reason that I put the third sentence in about the club is that we actually let to the management committee of the Marion Sports and Community Club, and then the bowling club hear from them. so we need them as part of the mix as well. So I so move because I think this is admirable.
Just a question, Your Worship. Within this, part of it is that we reprioritise works to bring, but effectively bring the works forward by a couple of financial years, I imagine. Do we know, with under the current budget, when these prioritised works, or when this works, in which financial year they would have been prioritised had they gone to schedule? The roof expenditure, which we're accountable for.
Through the chair, so this work would have been undertaken in 2016-17. So we're bringing the works forward as part of being a minor renewal capital works program.
So it's just a 12-month shuffle, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Easy.
Thank you. I've got a just a couple of slides that Victoria got. And I understand the clicker's not working tonight. So, okay, you can just move straight on to the next slide, thanks. So just as a by way of just brief background, my name's Mark Barty. I've been the town planning consultant for this particular application and also the one at 142 Morfitt Road, and I'm representing Telstra here tonight. So the application at 142 Morfitt Road was refused in September last year. Telstra appealed that decision in November while we held some initial discussions with council staff. Council encouraged Telstra to look at Kellett Reserve, and that was explained to the court at a preliminary conference on the 1st of December. And there was an adjournment on that basis granted to the 25th of March. However, due to internal issues at council, council failed to make any advances on that site by the March 2015 conference, but nevertheless Telstra agreed to allow another period of time for council to work on those issues, and we adjourned that conference again to the 30th of June. The DA was granted on the Kellett Reserve site on the 1st of July by council's development assessment panel, and Telstra was advised shortly before the release of the council report that's before you tonight that Kellett Reserve was not being recommended at this time and two other council-owned sites were being looked at. Telstra engaged an independent planner to assess all four sites, which are marked on this map, although they're a little bit hard to see. So you've got Kellett Reserve at the bottom. To the left of that, you've got it's marked as Council Reserve, which is the Regan Avenue Reserve. On the left-hand side, you've got 142 Morfitt Road, and in the top, you've got Nomboto Court and the reserve on the Sturt River. We engaged an independent planner to assess all four sites and rank them according to their relative impacts and the provisions of the development plan. The planner was provided with this map, but no other information apart from the fact that a DA had been granted at Kellett Reserve and one was refused at 142 Morfitt Road. So we kept it as independent as we could possibly do. He provided Telstra with a written opinion that ultimately concluded with rankings of the four sites, which is on the next slide, and his rankings were that Kellett Reserve was clearly the best site, 142 Morfitt Road was next, Regan Avenue was third, and Nomboto Court was a distant fourth. He was also invited to put forward any other locations within the search area which he felt would have less impact than Kellett Reserve. And his view on that was on the screen there. I've been provided with a copy of Telstra's search area and I'm not able to find any other location within the search area that would provide a better outcome than Kellett Reserve. He's also indicated that he could support Telstra's appeal at 142 Morfitt Road, including giving expert evidence to the court if council elects not to allow the facility at Kellett Reserve. In other words, this independent opinion, which was not influenced by any discussions prior, has concluded that Kellett Reserve is the best overall outcome, but not if not available, 142 Morford Road is sufficiently in accordance with the development plan should that it should be approved. That's also Telstra's view, and we hope once investigated more thoroughly by Council, its view also. So quickly, where to from here? Telstra has considered the report before Council tonight and is very keen to get some certainty and finality in this matter because it's been dragging on for some months. As a first preference, Telstra would like Council to make a decision on the lease at Kellett Reserve at tonight's meeting, ideally to approve it, as the planning consent is now in place. But if that's not to be the case, at next week's court conference, Telstra will seek to set the appeal at 142 Morford Road down for hearing. However, will do so at a date sufficiently in the future that it will allow for Council to undertake its proposed community forums in August and report back to Council in early September. In other words, a hearing date towards the end of September. At this time, Telstra is undecided on how actively it wishes to participate in those forums and expects to be provided with some more details so that decision can be taken. It is Telstra's desire to move this matter on and resolve it, but it's not Telstra's desire to be unreasonable in not allowing Council to undertake some further investigations as long as they are done in a reasonably prompt manner. Following the September meeting, Council may wish to approve the lease at Kellett Reserve, which Telstra will happily accept, and the hearing at 142 Morford Road will not proceed. If Council declines the lease at Kellett Reserve, the appeal at 142 Morford Road will most likely proceed. It may decide to offer up another site to Telstra, but Telstra would ask that evidence be provided that from both a planning and community perspective, whatever this new location is clearly better than either Kellett Reserve or 142 Morford Road, and that'll obviously be subject to further discussion at the time. But whatever the outcome, there will be sufficient time between the Council meeting in September and the court hearing for a range of outcomes, some of which will avoid a hearing altogether. I note that there's also a third party joined to the appeal, Mr. Luca, who will speak in a moment, and his input would also be required. But Telstra would point out that neither Telstra staff or contractors, Council staff, nor an independent planner can at the moment point to another site within the search area which is clearly better than Kellett Reserve, available to Telstra, and we anticipate that will probably be the outcome of future consultation by Council. In conclusion, Telstra prefers Kellett Reserve, but the site at 142 Morford Road, where a lease is already agreed, is also an acceptable solution. I'm happy to take questions.
Mr. Bodie, for your presentation. That basically, if Council looks at any of those other two options, and just makes that decision, Telstra, the ones that are three or four, does that mean Telstra will say, no, we prefer number two if you're not going with number one?
I think what... I think what will be apparent is that there are some constraints on both three and four in terms of proximity to residents, which is one of the problems at 142 Morford Road. And in terms of the Regan Avenue Reserve, it's also a completely open reserve. There are large trees, but at ground level it's completely open and we'll have a structure with no relationship to any other structure that'll we think will stand out quite significantly there. So if Council decides after consultation that either 3 and 4 are better, Telstra will be very interested to hear why they're better, and obviously that'll be discussed at the time about whether we proceed down that path or not. If Council thinks that it is clearly better, then it's going to be problematic for Telstra to proceed with its appeal anyway, while there is a supposedly better site available to Telstra. So it's probably a little bit premature to say what the outcome will be, but if Council presents another site to Telstra and says we'd like you to investigate it, Telstra will investigate it.
Would the Council decision and the DAP decision need to be finalised if there was another site before the hearing date?
No, that's not practical anyway.
Okay. No. So it's just be the landlord's consent if it is for one of the other two sites, and then obviously pending the decision of the DAP and obviously what Telstra might say.
If a hearing date's already set down, probably apply to the court to adjourn that hearing while the necessary steps were taken. But Telstra would need to be, reasonably convinced that there's a a reasonable prospect of success, because as you'd appreciate, that was our expectation at Kellett Reserve in terms of there being reasonable prospects of a decision being taken, and that hasn't happened. So if I think Council will need to do some work there in terms of explaining how it's going to work, and Telstra is certainly open to listening to that. That's not a problem.
Okay. I've got another question. I guess, what are the options to mitigate the appearance of the actual towers and the boxes? I know Hollywood Plaza, it's a different type of tower.
Uh-huh. Be careful what you wish for if you're going to say palm tree.
Yeah, but I guess, like, is there a way of, I guess, you know, because at the moment I understand that the telecommunication providers say the greys are a very broad colour, but it actually looks space age and it's sort of in the middle of wherever it might be. Are there other options to mitigate the appearance of these where they might be on council land?
We've already had some preliminary discussions on site with council staff about, particularly in relation to, and this was included in the development assessment panel report, in relation to the equipment shelter at the bottom, which is a reasonable size structure. It's not huge, but it is a reasonable size structure. And there was some discussion about whether landscaping would be an appropriate outcome or not. But as you probably know, the oval takes up most of that site and there's not actually a lot of room around it. But there has been some discussions about Telstra contributing towards some artworks for the shelter. Those discussions haven't progressed very far because we're not far enough down the track. And that's actually underway at the moment at a site at Prospect, where that was an agreement that we came to with the council for some artwork around on a fence and on the shelter. So in term, or landscaping is usually the other way of doing it, but we don't think that there's sufficient room to be for it to be practical and useful. In terms of the structure itself, painting the structure a particular shade of grey, which we've used on lots of monopoles around the city and elsewhere, it's a wattle colour that that takes the shine off the pole and it actually blends in fairly well. That makes the pole sort of less offensive, if you like. But probably the thing that's most difficult to deal with is all of the gear that goes on top of the pole, the antennas and the bits and pieces that actually make it work. And pardon me. And there are some difficulties in screening that sort of stuff because it takes up quite a lot of room. So you end up with something very bulky at the top of a tower, a lot of wind loading and all of that sort of stuff, as well as difficulties with maintenance and access. Telstra is open to discussion about what that might look like, but there are practical and also safety limitations about what can actually occur at the top of the pole. But we're certainly alive to the idea of doing something at the bottom of the pole around the equipment shelter to try and not make it look like a shed sitting on the edge of the oval.
Finally, with your leave, Your Worship, I know the monopole design, it's probably similar to the one on Warraparinga, actually, near the Westpac. That's the sort of, I don't know if that's one of the Telstra ones. It's basically, it's not the trident sort of look. You've basically got things on the one pole, so it's one structure, not sort of things going out. Yep. Is that going to be added to? Is that possibly going to be added to in the future?
The one at Kellett Reserve?
If there was one on council land, but yep. I guess anywhere in there. Would that be added to in future, or is that likely to no longer be as, I guess, inoffensive as the less offensive, I guess, as the monopoles are? The less obtrusive, I guess, probably.
Yeah, no, I understand what you mean. No, that one over by the Westpac building is, I think, an Optus pole, but there is an ability for the carriers, not just the carrier who owns the pole, to add additional equipment in the future, and the federal government provides exemptions from local town planning regulations for that to happen, so that can happen without any further approval. So what gets approved initially might not be what it looks like in 2 or 5 years' time. It might look significantly different, but that is outside the scope of, in terms of planning regulations, there's no ability to control that. There may be an ability if council is the landholder for additional equipment to require consent, and that obviously gives council some control over how the structure might end up looking. If another carrier came along and said we'd like to locate on there too, they would need to negotiate, some space at the base for an equipment shelter or the similar. and that would be a discussion between council and that carrier, but there would be only limited controls over what ends up on the pole for the second carrier, because they would be able to basically put whatever they like on it. So there are some difficulties there, and some practical difficulties in terms of keeping control of it.
In terms of what can happen after the structure goes up at whatever site is chosen, can you give an assurance to this council that the structure won't be painted red and white stripes or any other corporate colours that you might fancy, if you take my point?
I do take your point. This the structure at 142 Morfitt Road, and I assume the one on Kellett Reserve, was referred to the airport, and there are no OLS issues, so there'd be no need to mark the tower. But I would just make the point, the tower you're referring to doesn't belong to Telstra.
Originally built by Telstra?
No, it was originally built by Vodafone.
Sold on, I think.
Not sure.
Well, then I thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Hannah, councillors and fellow residents and members of the community who make up the City of Marion. My name's Matthew Luca, a resident of Stanley Street in Glengowrie, and I've been involved in this matter, as Mr Barde alluded to, since early 2014 when the tower was first proposed at 142 Morfitt Road. As mentioned, I'm a joint party with the City of Marion in fighting this appeal in the ERD Court, and unfortunately for my neighbours, the council and myself, Telstra tend to win cases once they go to ERD court, and thus the site at 142 Morfitt Road still exists as a very real possibility. Until now, I've greatly appreciated the way in which Telstra and the City of Marion have, under encouragement from the court, cooperated in an attempt to see this tower placed in a location which will minimise impact on the local community. In today's world, it's a reality that such towers go somewhere. Higher powers than sit in this room have made the decision and deemed the towers safe, and thus any argument must focus on the best possible location for them to exist. I understand better than most why the residents and neighbours around Kellett Reserve don't want a tower there, but my neighbours and I equally do not want the tower at 142 Morfitt Road, and I'm not here to pick a fight between residents. My main purpose of speaking tonight is to remind Council and everybody in attendance that this is not a simple decision between a tower existing in the vicinity or not. No tower would be ideal, but this is reality, and thus we need to find the best location in a bad situation. The opposition to Kellett Reserve is no more significant than the opposition to 142 Morfitt Road. Both sites had petitions in opposition to the proposed developments, and both had formal representations made against them. It should be noted that the volume of opposition at 142 Morfitt Road was as much, if not more, than the opposition at Kellett Reserve. However, the ongoing consultation regarding Kellett Reserve proposal has been much more thorough and involved than was ever conducted for 142 Morfitt Road. Excuse me. And importantly, it has been much more recent and is thus fresh in everyone's mind. While I appreciate the Council fulfilled its obligations when originally consulting residents at the time 142 Morfitt Road was proposed, that was over 12 months ago. The area now contains new residents, and many existing residents are unaware that a tower near them is still a very real possibility. The City of Marion's community plan towards 2040 lists one of the key themes as having engaged and empowered residents who work together to build strong neighbourhoods. As such, I request that any further consultation involves the residents neighbouring 142 Morfitt Road. It would be grossly unjust if the residents who successfully opposed this tower over a year ago were forced to abide the tower in the end simply because they were not empowered nor engaged when final decisions were made. because the reality of this situation is, if no other decision is made, it will end up next to us. Just because the proposed site at 142 Morfitt Road is on private land does not mean the overall result is any better or less harmful to the neighbourhood. The Towards 2040 Community Plan also lists livability as a key theme, stipulating the City of Marion be well planned to achieve this. If the tower ended up at 142 Morfitt Road, the tower would exist in a location which did not meet the Council's development criteria, when alternatives are available that do have development and planning approval. In other words, a 142 Morfitt Road tower would conflict with the Council's own strategic direction. I urge the Council and Telstra to find the best site and consult all residents equally as the matter proceeds. It is not just a fair and just thing to do, but when a decision is made, the Council can say it has maximised its aspiration of livability in its own community plan. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I'm a resident who lives on the corner, or Shelley Roach, a resident who lives on the corner of McKellar Terrace and Cobham Avenue. So our home is located on the perimeter of the Oval. My husband's a life member of the Morfittville Park Football Club, Cricket Club, and currently coaches the under-10s. I was a coach, umpire and netball and player for the netball club. I only have 5 minutes, so I'm just going to get straight into the reasons why the tower shouldn't be there. It was hard to prepare for tonight because I didn't know what was going to be said by the other people. The sporting club have always said that they will only proceed if it was supported by the community, because they're part of the community. This is stated in the council documents. When considering the community consultation feedback and petition, it's evident that it has not been given. Today, Justin Clark, the club president, questioned whether the council is happy with the whether the council is happy that they have consulted with the community appropriately. The community agree and want further consultation as recommended in your papers, but this further delays Telstra, who have already tried to cooperate with Council. If the community consultation proceeds no further before a decision between the two sites is made, then you should not approve the change to land use. The sporting club are looking to extend the premises in the exact area the mobile phone tower will be located. They have no other option due to the limited vacant land surrounding the Oval. Their priority is not a light tower, but to have more change rooms. If the tower is placed in a suitable location for the extension to still occur, then there's no room for other mobile phone carriers to put their housing units at the base, which will ultimately mean another mobile phone tower in our area, which I'm sure we don't want. The sporting club have said that they have or will request to move the existing light towers to the outside of the fence perimeter, as they are not a safe distance from the Oval and create a risk to the players on the Oval. There's more of a risk with a mobile phone tower and a housing unit placed within 2 metres of the Oval boundary, and it's going to be 1 metre wide, much more difficult for players to manoeuvre around. The World Health Organisation has said that the EMEs are possibly carcinogenic, and research is continuing. Whether this is proven or not, the perception of the risk will impact on the sports club membership base. Understandably, parents of the juniors are not willing to take a chance with their kids, as they'll be standing directly under the tower listening to it hum. The club does not have the reputation or professional coaches like South Adelaide, as most are dads, like my husband, who just want to help the kids. There's no reason for the parents to stay with a multitude of sporting clubs in our area, and a majority of our junior parents oppose this development. Juniors are the future of the club, and everything should be done to retain as many as possible. The Oval is surrounded by residential properties, that are located within metres of the tower. The impact on the residents living here are real. People who own their homes have said that they don't want to live there, and my neighbour has sold her home before the DAP approval happened with the pending development. Properties were bought and developed to have an outlook over the oval, two with balconies, which will look directly onto the mobile phone tower. Just in case it didn't invade our private space enough, lights are being placed on it so we can see it at night time too. I've provided you with pictures from my home showing you where the tower will be placed, and now I will see it from all living areas in my home, including my bedroom and my children's bedroom. The Kellett Reserve Oval, Park and Barbecue are a place where the community congregate, stay for lengths of time to enjoy the facilities provided by the council with family and friends. I spoke to people using the facility when I had a free moment, and all of them signed the petition. The community do not believe this is the best location for a phone tower, as open, usable spaces are highly valued as residential land sizes reduce. When preparing my notes for the DAP, I spoke to residents in the community using the facilities and open space. 172 provided me with their signatures to oppose the installation of the tower, and I was provided with another 24 by a resident after the document needed to be returned to the DAP. With properties being knocked down and redeveloped, areas like this are of great importance to the community. They need open, clear space to relax in, kick a footy in, hit a cricket ball, as backyards are getting smaller and smaller. The phone tower should not be placed in an area where residents want to spend lengths of time, but on land currently not used by the community or as a minimum pass-through. There are several locations where it could be located, where I do not see children, family or people coming together, and if the substation is definitely not an option, areas that should be considered have already been provided to Councillor Jason Valescu. I hope I said it right. When speaking to local residents, their housing trust tenants did not feel like they had a right to an opinion, as it wasn't their property. They had a reduced understanding of the process and no belief that their opinion would matter. They think that no matter what anyone else does, the tower was going to go ahead anyway. They felt disengaged and powerless, which was disturbing. This is why Council received limited responses to the DAP, not because the community believe it's in the right location, but because they feel defeated. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. I'll move the motion as is, that basically we formally write or engage with Telstra, that we're not in a position at this point to make a decision regarding Kellett Reserve, rather that we'd like to undertake further consultation to identify a location which has least impact on the residential community. And I'll take the rest as read. Council isn't considering this option option on its land just to try to delay the process and waste Telstra and Mr. Barty's time. We're doing this to, mitigate and look at if there is another option from one that was knocked back from our development assessment panel, being the one at 142. So that's why we're considering it. And obviously that they're in the extra consultation that we've done for Kellett Reserve, because it is our land, the community has asked us to look at other sites, and I think we need to do that. Not only for the people in Kellett Reserve who around Kellett Reserve, but also for the people at 142 Morfitt Road. Now, hopefully, we'll be able to look at the whole area that Telstra is able to place one of these facilities in, and then we can see about which area will have the least impact. As I said, I guess it's not a decision I'd like to make to choose the location, but we are going to be effectively choosing the location. So let's get out there and have a good look at this. Ideally, it would have been good to possibly look at all those locations and rule the others out first. But this process did start through, I guess, a bit of a change as far as council goes. We had the caretaker period. Obviously, it's like when Telstra would have, if they had a new board and Sol Trujillo left and someone else came in, you do have a lot of change. So whilst I don't appreciate Telstra going forth with 142 to force us into this position, I do appreciate their patience and from which what Mr. Barty indicated, the willingness to give us that opportunity to look at that other option if council decides. So ideally, I'd like the next time this comes to us that we make a decision either way. We decide if and where on council land this would go, and we move accordingly. We make that decision once. The community has time to put their views across about not only the facility itself, the location, but the nature of the location and the possible mitigations, things like that. And once we make that decision, then pending the development assessment panel, if it's new, or whether it's approved or whether it goes to the ERD because we decide none, then that's it. Thank you.
Question once again, Your Worship. Firstly, I just want to be absolutely clear. Under the terms of this motion, this won't necessarily exclude Kellett, will it? It's just saying that we're looking at all options. Yep, beautiful, excellent. And my other question, the consultation will include all residents and stakeholders that have been involved to date, is that correct? Beautiful. Sure, thank you.
I speak against the motion. It's something I should have done last time, to be honest. I foolishly went along with the council last time because I thought we'd allow community consultation to take effect. I did, unfortunately, believe the Morfordville Park Sporting Club that they had pretty much total support. It's not true. And above all, Mr. Mayor, I certainly don't want to be seen as an elected member prepared to get into bed with a national telco in terms of taking their money and allowing these sort of monstrosities to happen on a council reserve. Mr. Mayor, no matter where we put this, people won't want it. I've been around too long. I've opposed so many phone towers. Not far from here, actually. I've taken my own council to court over phone towers and won. And I was uncomfortable last time. I'm even more uncomfortable now. Now I've realised that it was folly to even suggest this. The notion of taking the money and becoming dependent on phone towers to fund council projects is unpalatable. It's just as much as unpalatable to me, Mr. Mayor, as taking money from poker machines from council facilities as well. And there's two or three facilities in Marion that has that, and it's a dependence on poker machines in that case. Here we are now with a phone tower, developing a dependence on phone tower income to fund council projects, to put up some lighting towers, which we should be doing anyway. That's in the report. In the discussion paper with the community, it actually raises that. Why isn't the council doing it anyway? Why are we actually dependent on phone towers? It's a very good question. To sit here and listen to the representative from Telstra with this arrogant approach that we'll do it anyway, pretty much, is really hard for me to actually to take on board. Just and really, it's...
I don't think it's appropriate for us to be saying comments like that about people that are doing deputations.
It
Right, well, Councillor Valesky has succeeded in interrupting the debate. Thank you for that. Yeah, but, you know, it throws you out of step, you know, if you've got a bit of a thing running. He knows that. Mr Mayor, I referred to one phone tower in our city at the moment we're threatening to take legal action about because they painted it red and white. Those people, those poor buggers down there in Edwardstown objected to that phone tower, so what does the telco do? Stuck it right up and by painting it red and white. That's the sort of attitude that I'm talking about from these telcos. And now, if we go along with this, Mr Mayor, we will actually reduce our capacity to represent the community into the future by opposing phone towers, because what's the telcos going to say? Council took the money over there and they had major community objections. They took the money, but over here, they're against it. It's a dangerous precedent for us to be involved in. We should not be involved in this, Mr Mayor. That's my strong view.
Just what I thought was a personal remark, so I apologise to Councillor Hull. It was no intention at all to disrupt his debate. I just wanted to have a little bit of, decorum when people come to address us, but that was pointed out. Anyway, look, for me it's not about the money, it's not about us, it's about trying to get a better solution for the location, and that's the only reason that I'm supporting us looking at other locations. It's not, ideally I'd like no tower at all, that'd be great, then all the residents are going to be happy, but it's looking as if we are going to have a tower, we have an opportunity to influence the location and hopefully minimise some of those impacts that are quite negative or people find negative, and that's what it's all about, and that's why looking at another location. You know, we can basically say, oh well, you know, we don't want any towers, and you know, are we going to get a worse outcome for our community? Let's look into that, and that's why I've been supporting it. That's the reason, you know, we should go through and look at what those options are. As I said, if Telstra decide tomorrow that no, they're not going to go with 142 and then that's fine. You know, I'll be happy to, you know, not consider any other options, but that's not the case. And they'll come to us just like they did with Seaton Gardens, and they'll have a lot of technical evidence which probably we can say anything about if they even need it for 142. So that's why we're looking at it. We're just looking about minimising the impact. We're not here to make headlines. We're here to actually get results and minimise, get a solution to a very tricky and complex problem.
every confidence in Mr. Ricketts to convey our views.
Yeah, I think this is more of a government item rather than a council item. I don't see value particularly in it. It's yet another committee we seem to go on with no actual outcome. The 5,500 is actually not the true cost. We do lose members of staff. We do pay for travel, and we do have members of council previously going on trips all over the state, all over the country. So it's the funding is a bit hidden in that motion, and I'm not against it. I'm against it.
Glenn, if Mr. Ricketts was our representative, is that a problem in any way? I just asked the... just in regards to the logistics, are we able to have just the staff member and no one from council?
That's on, yep, through the chair, yep. My understanding is that we can send staff members without having a formal resolution, but if we wanted them to formally represent council, it would be prudent, I think, to recognise that in the resolution.
That we would need to formally have Mr. Ricketts as our council nominee, because I'm guessing that was possibly assumed that he would be our nominee. So do we need to formalise that?
Through the chair, if we wanted to have the staff member have voting rights, I think it would be prudent to recognise his rights through the resolution. So nominating him formally, I think that would be a wise thing to do.
Seconder to, yep.
Well, Mr. Ricketts had said that if he gets on the Stormwater Authority on Thursday, he'll know, then he won't be in a position, won't be free to be doing Murray-Darling as well as the Stormwater Authority.
Mr. Mayor, I'm glad we actually did resolve the issue about Mr. Ricketts having formal voting rights. But more importantly, that Mr. Ricketts would have the formal right to raise matters. And if members look at page 68 of the of the association's report, 7.2, general discussion, Mr. Ricketts features strongly there and with some great technical intervention and advice for that organisation. Not only can that association learn a lot from Mr. Ricketts, but I think this council could as well, given the right opportunities. I think if we're talking about one staff member involved, the costs that Mr. Crosland is worried about would be diminished. It would be staff time anyway. And I'm sure we will get the appropriate report back from the staff member in regards to his interaction with that association. I think it would be actually good money spent. In the past, I tend to agree with Councillor Crosland about some of the trips. However, in this case, I don't think we've got the same issue. So I say move.
We have a question just in regards to page 73 in the policy. It's probably Mr. Hooper or Mr. Melhuish. Okay. I just want to know as to how the Model 1 or Model 2 option will be decided before I move. So is that something that we decide?
Through the chair, I was sitting down when I take it was which model do we choose?
How do we choose?
It's really up to council at that particular point in time, and it comes down to the type of DPA and the situations itself. But if it's probably a fairly complicated one, we may decide that we'll take control of that. If it's a fairly minor one, we may decide we'll. They can do it as long as we keep the required checks on them. It's really down to council at that particular point in time. No. That's correct.
Possible to include something in the policy that we minimise the risk associated when council isn't in full control of it? Just further to clarify that, we have issues with private certifiers. and the failures that occur when private certifiers are used. So I'm just wondering if we devolve the process too much or delegate the process too much, we may increase those problems.
Yeah, through the chair, you'll notice with Model 2 it talks about a peer review. Now that takes the risk out of it. What happens is that at key moments or key times through the DPA process, we will actually get peer review. In some instances we'll actually make the decision ourselves, but in other instances we'll actually get an independent consultant to look at it and advise us one way or the other whether they believe that what's being done or suggested is appropriate. That's correct. Yeah.
I'm happy to move the motion as is. Obviously, this is something new. It allows for some of these investments to move forward. I would like to see a review after about 12 months just to see what's happened. I am still a bit sceptical about the private certifiers, the impact that they have, when obviously the people who are most to gain out of developments employ people to make some of those critical decisions, and we have the impacts that we have to pay for. So I would like to see that and hopefully amend the policy at that point if we need to. As far as the peer review, like, we are meant to check a lot of developments, and we obviously don't have the opportunity to do that. And that's why sometimes you will get things happen. I can tell you of one where, you know, that there have been some issues. And I guess also another thing is there's all these developments happening now that the government is, I think they're federally funded because they're going to create jobs. We sidestep a whole lot of development approvals, and they're the very developments and cause of problems that wouldn't happen under our development plan. So that's why I'm also cautious of this approach. So, but I'm happy to support it and see how we go.
Mr. Mayor, I have watched on with interest about how this has actually happened in a neighbouring council. I don't think it went particularly well. And the perception of the community that the council had control over what was happening was diminished, in my opinion. And therefore, that I do struggle with Model 2. Model 1, I think, actually gives us more control over what would transpire with this change in approach. I'm not real happy about pretty much unchecked terminations by private companies and their consultants. I'm none too happy about us paying for a consultant to advise us as to what should happen. But we were in the business of reducing consultants. So, for example, the DPA that went through with Castle Plaza, if the original report that was presented by that organisation did, in my opinion, seem to try and conceal contaminated site. And in fact, I did wonder why the report sort of was left in the elected members' room for a considerable amount of time before it was even drawn to our attention. Now, if this was done by that process, option two, I don't know whether we would have the full control. And I guess I'm sharing Councillor Valescu's concerns. And when I get this concern, I don't have the same inclination to actually move the motion, if you take my point. Why would you do that? Why would you have concerns and yet move the motion? I'm not going to be part of this, Mr. Mayor. Option model one, I could lean towards. I'd like to know more about this. So I'm going to vote against this tonight.
Can I ask a question? If I could just maybe get a response regarding the statement made by Councillor Hall first, that'd be great.
Through the chair, with the model two, it's not that. In fact, council gets the actual process is exactly the same either way. It has to go through the normal regulatory process, and all the key stages, like whether it's model one or model two, the DAP comes before council. All those key stages. Not only do we get peer review, but it has to come before council at all those key stages. And if council's not happy with it at any time, they can just cut it off. So there's a lot of checks and balances there, even for the second one, even though it sounds as if there isn't. And as I was saying before, you get to choose in the beginning which one you want to use, and that will come down to the nature of the actual application. If there are a lot of issues, you may decide we want to take more control of this. But if it's a fairly minor one that is just a really simple rezoning, which isn't going to take a great deal of effort, it almost seems that's a choice you make at that time, but that's the sort of thing that you would probably let go. Or consider model two for.
Yep, so just two more point questions, obviously following on from Councillor Hall. So in model one, my interpretation was that most of it is funded by private person and all the checks and balances are done internally by council staff. Model two, it's all funded by the private person and a peer review, which is a private contractor, is also funded by the private person, as in there'll be no additional consultant fees to council.
Through the chair, yeah, that's correct. Council would come out of this cost neutral. Any additional consultations or reviews we would get the developer to pay for, we would actually contract those people out, but the developer would actually pay the fees.
With the so-called independent consultant that's paid for by the developer, who picks that consultant?
Through the chair, we do.
You pick that consultant?
Well, we or council would pick that consultant. We'd pick an independent one that hasn't been involved in it.
And where does that consultant finally get its payment from?
What would generally happen is that, and as part of this policy, it actually suggests that there's like a fund within council, so the developer will be paying council the money, we'll keep it in a fund, and so we actually pay the consultant, but we get the monies from the developer, and then council pays the consultant.
So the check comes from us?
That's correct.
Just a quick question. I can see an area where this goes perhaps a little pear-shaped if a developer goes to put through a privately funded DPA and it gets all the way to the end and we knock it back. Is there any recourse for that developer? According to the policy, I haven't sort of been able to read anything about a recourse for that. I mean, does he have any say in the matter, or do they have any say in the matter, or is it just that's it?
Through the chair. Council at any time can say, no, we don't like it. It's the same as any other development DPA, that council can continue, and then at any time, even if we instigate it ourselves, we can say no. One of the things that is entered into earlier in is an agreement with the developer, and it's a contractual agreement, a legal agreement if you like, and as part of that it actually, and it says it in here, but it'll come out in more legal terms, but in that it says that council can decide not to continue with it at any time, and the developer has to agree to that situation.
Thank you, Worship. I happily move as written. Look, we've had a few sort of flat items tonight, so it's good to have an inspiring one. Look, this is first and foremost through you, Your Worship. I'd like to thank Council for support, Council's past and present, for support on this project over quite a considerable period of time. This has been a long decision in the making, not just over the last couple of councils, but actually over the last 70-odd years, because when this area was surveyed, there was a severe lack of open space left. It was post-war, you know, there was a lot of babies magically appearing, and people had to have houses, so they just whacked them in, you know, wall to wall, fence to fence, and no one had the regard to think about open space. That's what this is all about, and that's what this is about redressing. Because of that poor planning, there's been quite a few generations, probably up to four generations, I'd guess, that of kids who haven't been able to walk to a park, living within that general region, haven't been able to walk to a park and kick a footy. That's what this is all about, and that's what this is aiming to address. Back 21 years ago, in 1994, I believe we had one member who was actually with us still this evening. We had a forward-thinking council who set up what was called the Open Space Reserve Fund to one day address this issue in this general region within the City of Marion. It's not just the City of Marion that's immune to this. There's other neighbouring councils that also have this problem within this region. The council that day didn't know exactly where or when this project would happen, just that there were parts of the city where this was desperately needed, and they had the foresight to actually think about that and to put this money aside, and future monies aside as well. The last council chose to secure the land with a lot of work, a lot of negotiation, and also with significant grant funding assistance from the state. This council has chosen to apply additional open space funds to develop the site, again, also with significant assistance from the state government. An interesting point with this project, with the exception of the public consultation money and with the exception of staff time to date, we haven't actually spent any rates money on this. This has all been grant funded and all been open space reserve funded. We haven't actually shelled into general rates money for this to date. Look, this, and for that reason, I think this is really a poster child for reserve funds and what we can actually potentially do with them. We've told the community that we're looking to build a precinct level open space. They're very excited. We've got 94% of respondents to public consultation who have been who are in favour. I'll leave it at that.
Delighted to second this, Mr. Mayor. I think the other points that needs to be mentioned, that there's been two separate council reports into the need for open space in the north of the council area. They've both gathered a lot of dust over that period of time, and this recommendation tonight actually goes some way to actually address the findings of those two separate reports, which is a great thing. And the other point that I'd like to make is that this is all happening without a phone tower or two. It's good. It is a good news story. I don't think the people in that area fully understand the improved amenity that's going to come to their area. They've probably got a bit of an idea seeing the open space now, but it should and will be something special for them, and they deserve it. They've been waiting a long time, and I'd like to pay tribute to the council of 1994 for doing that. I think Councillor Joan Harriman was one of the ones that was enthusiastic about this, was enthusiastic about the need to address the open space issue in the north of the city, and it is probably the best item on the agenda tonight. Thank you.
No, because I was only going to move to put the motion, so I'm happy for Councillor Carey to speak.
Look, I'd just like to support this concept. The majority of residents I've spoken to, a few meetings, overwhelmingly they support it. It's very important that we do have open space in that area. It's an area, as Councillor Pfeiffer said, there's a lot of baby boomers there. They're slowly but surely retiring. We've got a lot of young families moving in there, and I think it will be an amenity that will be very beneficial for the residents of that area. So I commend the motion.
The community of Marion and Oaklands Park have voted on this. It was a substantial vote, 25%, which is very high for surveys. It was 1,900 people that we went out to, and I was surprised at the result that 51% don't want 40 kilometre an hour, and 49% did want 40 kilometres an hour, and 1% weren't decided of those that replied. So we now need to listen to our community, and I think this is particularly disappointing for those people in George Dwyer that have worked for 15 years to sort out some traffic solutions to a problem that still remains. So, in moving forward, we look forward to the very immediate local community looking at the George Finnis pavement solutions in the hope that that will give us something in the way of traffic alleviation, both in sound, speed, and also the whole mix of people that are moving through the area. We hope that in the future we can finish the Marion Historic Village landscape planning and to get the appropriate traffic bays, car parking bays in Finistery as the end of this whole solution. That has gone on for 15 years and now doesn't perhaps produce what we would have expected. But we do listen to our community, and this is what they want.
Yeah, I'll second it, just so that we can move on. I'm not surprised by the results. Probably, I actually thought there'd be more people against the 40k zone than we actually got, but not a surprise. I think the public have realised that it wouldn't really have impacted on the number of cars, and it probably wouldn't really have impacted on the speed. Hope that we can move forward and actually look at alternative methods of reducing the cars, if that's what we want to do. But I still believe that we know that the Oaklands Crossing will feature in that, and that would be where I would ask members to focus their attention.
Just in relation to this code of conduct matter, I'd like to say on that council day I received news that my divorce had been finalised. I'd mixed emotions about the final breakup of my family after more than 12 years of marriage. And as you understand, this is an extremely personal matter. I consumed a minimal amount of alcohol that was mixed with prescriptions before the council meeting. This was an error of judgment, and I think I should not drink alcohol while on these medications. I've already apologised for drinking alcohol prior to the council meeting and sincerely apologise to the community and elected members for my actions. So on that note, I'll leave the meeting.
The process. Normally we do deal with code of conduct issues most of the time in confidence. Seeing it was a very public issue, and if there's no issues, I'd be happy to look at this one in public, but I don't know if there's any. Do we know if Councillor Kerry has any objections to us discussing this in public, just I guess out of an aside?
The previous regime and council were only too happy to take elected members behind the toilet block and summarily deal with them out of the eye of the public. And I think that actually has as many problems attached to that as it does having it out in the open. But in this case, it's a very straightforward matter, in my opinion. The investigation was done by the media, essentially. I'm happy to have a look at the fairly straightforward approach that this should take without spending a lot of ratepayers' money on pointing out the bleeding obvious to us what we need to do.
I know, what do we mean, Tech, by censure? I'm happy to move as is. I don't think that behaviour was appropriate. It was a very poor judgment. I think this is the first time I've actually seen the councillor in such a state. I think I've seen him out socially, so it doesn't indicate to me any sort of pattern of behaviour, but we don't want it to be a pattern of behaviour. It has looked badly on us as a community and on elected members, but it has also put Councillor Kerry under the spotlight, and I guess he's basically been shamed for what he did and that error of judgment. I would be comfortable to leave it at that, but I guess the community will be watching, and the council will be watching, and I think it's now up to Councillor Kerry to demonstrate that was a isolated error of judgment, and we can proceed to working on the issues for which we've been elected to work on.
No, only that I've spoken to Councillor Gard about this. He, as he's mentioned in his comments, believes that in case there is a proximity issue and he does want to continue to represent the Marino residents, he would rather not have the potential conflict of interest. So I will represent the Coastal Ward on his behalf.
This matter came to my attention when the Cosgrove Hall Management Committee last year paid $287 odd to council as their part of the emergency services levy that council had to pay, and this year they had to pay $1,138.60, a 296% increase. Now, my concern is that this is a voluntary group that is a management committee, and they pass on the costs because that's the only way they can survive and respond to council's request by charging the Austral Volleyball Club, the gymnastics clubs and so on, this fee. And this means that those clubs, which again work with voluntary people, have to do their chocolate sales and their raffles and goodness knows what to collect money, which in the end goes towards the emergency services levy. And I believe there's something quite unjust about this, and the elected members, the local members, the local state members are prepared to try and take this up. And so in that end, I've suggested that we write to relevant people, Revenue SA, the relevant minister, our local parliamentarians, about the main group of ESL people that had significant rises over $100 and are impacted upon by this. So I so move.
The LTA, what's happening, Mr. Mayor, can you give me an explanation, please, in regards to what the LGA has or hasn't done about this issue? Mr. Mayor, could I make a comment about the motion? Mr. Mayor, I congratulate Councillor Telfer and Valescu for moving and seconding this motion. There's a degree of irony in this that as an emergency service volunteer that I am, that I have to pay emergency service levy as well to help me do my job. But anyway, we've heard all that from all around the state. Now in our own city, our volunteers are now having to struggle to pay emergency services levy. And I've got to tell you, Mr. Mayor, and I've got to be very careful as a serving member of the Country Fire Service, that it's only because I'm sitting here right now that I feel comfortable and at liberty to speak my mind, that even with the levy increases, we're getting a crap service to operate within. Trucks that are older than a lot of the members that are actually driving them. Training that has been wound back and wound back, where, you know, it's a struggle to actually get on courses. To get equipment to actually, you know, to do basic firefighting can often be a struggle. A lot of the brigades go out and raise funds, raffles and quiz nights and everything else to try and get enough pennies to actually operate as a brigade. Just about every weekend, some brigade's got something on to try and raise money. Sausage sizzles, quiz nights, I've said all that. And here we are also in a state where we have a major bushfire risk. We have picked up more volunteers since Sampson Flat, but we still don't have enough. We have to call on interstate resources far too often to actually come and get us out of the pickle. And I just think that, given the circumstances, the volunteers that are operating at the moment deserve to be congratulated more than you could ever imagine. To see our volunteers now penalised to actually support a government-funded operation that is really failing is of great concern to me as an elected member of the council. And I just hope that Councillor Valescu and Telfer succeed in getting a response from Revenue SA to actually help these groups get a better deal. There's something terribly wrong with this system that's not working.
Thank you, Your Honour. Just on that list with the question that Councillor Telfer asked about who was paying and the increases they had, and then looking at who is on the list in the motion, I would like to ask that the Marion RSL be included into that, but I also raise the point that the Glenelg Plimpton RSL is not listed on this list with the answers to the questions. So I'm asking, therefore, are there other groups that are missed on that list that we might need to think about putting into that motion?
I had advice to take the highlighted ones, which relate directly to our clubs, I believe. But I did do the research at the time. I just had lost to answer that. But I think it's
the Marion RSL has a 325% increase there.
Yeah. And I want, but it's about, sorry, it's about how that's happened and how it's passed on. So the ones that were highlighted were the ones that council, as I understood it, is asking for direct payment to them as such. But no, it's about the system, and I did know at the time. Sorry, I can't fully answer that at the moment.
Through the Chair, we can follow that up and check. My understanding was the highlighted ones were the increases that we'd written to Revenue SA, but we'll follow that up and make sure that all clubs are included in that as well, and we can confirm there's additional ones in that out to our members.
Sorry, yeah. So if I, ones that have already been on December the 14th asked about and we've had no response, and my initial motion is about at least let's have a response from December 2014 before we tackle the whole thing further.
Yeah, could I suggest there's probably many other groups, and maybe we should start to collate all those in preparation for a campaign.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big issue for our residents as well, and I find it quite comical that the government are looking at putting a cap on council rates at somewhere near CPI, and then we have a look at these type of figures, and we can pretty much guess where the pensioner concession came from and where all other future spending will come from. And it's just a case of they've taken a whole heap of money off the residents and they're given some back as a political win.
Yes. So I'd have to now say
that this relates to our application of December the 2014, that we haven't had any response to, any effort made. We want to make it more apparent. But I think there is value in listing at least this subset, because we want this letter to go also to the relevant MPs. And I actually went through and made a list of the relevant MPs, and when they receive this, they can then see, the Warradale, so the Warradale Tennis Club, I think it was, would be in that area, particular area, and so on. So I think it helps the local MPs to say, hey, this is affecting my local community. So I so move.
Thank you. Okay, I was going to do a Hollywood voiceover for it, but I won't. Look, last term we tried three times unsuccessfully to look at one measure to stop illegally dumped rubbish, and that was use of CCTV. Ideally, I think the message that we're getting across at the moment is we collect your rubbish for you. But the message we need to get out there as well is don't dump your rubbish, we will catch you. Or the other messages we need to get out there is speak to some of the areas, some of the stakeholders involved where rubbish is dumped. So if there are clusters of property, whether they're publicly owned, part of community housing, or privately owned, where we find that there is a lot of rubbish dumped, either due to end of lease or other circumstances, that we look at those landlords and see that they take some responsibility for that. And I think that's the big thing, people taking responsibility for their waste. I've got a unit in another area, and basically when there's end of lease, we have to pay for it. Because people just dump their stuff on the property, we have to pay for it. I think it should be up to the stratas to people are dumping rubbish because they're leaving property, they should pay for it. But I also think that we can look at working with these groups to prevent that. I think we need to get more signage out there that discourages people and tell them it is illegal. Because at the moment, in certain parts, and particularly when I visit my mum in Oaklands Park, there's rubbish there all the time. All the time. There will be dump rubbish there. And people just see, I put the rubbish out and council puts a wrapper around it, which means that they're going to collect it for me. That's essentially what we're saying to people. And I think that's good enough. But we are working with the staff on this, so that's why I'd like the opportunity to have that discussion, because they know what works, and then we can discuss with them what we're concerned about and our options. And I guess this approach is probably a little bit more collaborative than looking at one option such as CCTV. But we should look at options that will deter people, and that could be in the mix, but there could be other options as well. So that's why I raised this. With fees going up for dumping, it's going to become more of an issue. But it's also a sense of pride. I think people do want a sense of pride in their city. That's what I'd like to see us promoting. Thank you.
I think this could be a really good idea, especially with a holistic approach, looking at our current hard rubbish collections and tip tickets, which I seem to get a number of complaints about. So I'm also keen on what enforcement and preventative measures we already are using to tackle this. So yeah, I'd look forward to being part of that discussion.
Question directed to the staff. Page 109, it talks about a $315 fine for illegal dumping. How many of these infringements have been issued in the last couple of years? Penny?
Leave the number when asked over a few years was in the vicinity of 6 to 12, so it wasn't very many. I think of a period over at least 4 years, and that was a couple of years ago that question was asked.